Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nicol. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Whoa!
It's a Halloween special, guys.
Oh, yeah.
And we are just Halloweened up.
We're so Halloweened up. In fact, I'm so Halloweened up, I'm Halloween down.
You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. My name is Creepy Phil.
And my name is Not So Creepy David.
No, it's supposed to be Spooky David.
Oh, sorry, Spooky David.
Okay, you're Spooky David.
But you are Creepy Phil.
Just want to say before we go any further, all the people that are listening and regular listeners to the podcast, thank you so much for your support. All the wonderful letters, all of the entries into the song competition, and all of the great feedback we've been getting. It's really, really beautiful, and it helps us want to keep going. So thanks a lot for that. Right,
it is. It's really wonderful to look into our emails. What's our email again, Phil?
Our email is songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
Fantastic. It's amazing to look on there and then to see that we've had so many wonderful messages from you. So thank you for listening. And please do tell all your friends about our podcast.
Tell your mum and dad. They'll love it. There's no swearing.
They might like it.
Unless they like swearing.
I mean, you like it. You're old enough to be my dad.
So coming up on this week's episode, we have some more entries from the comedy song contest, and there's some real doozies in there this week, man.
There are. We're also going to be doing the quickfire parody round, which I've got a lot of redeeming to do. Do you remember it from last week?
What was the one?
Stand by Bees.
Stand by me. You turned into Stand by Bees. Great.
Yeah, it's strong.
Also, stick around to the end of the episode. You're going to hear a wonderful interview with one of our guests, someone that you may have seen on
Mock the Week and Live at the Apollo recently as well.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's taking the comedy world by storm, and her name is Rialina.
How many years have you been doing comedy for?
Like enough to put me firmly in my 30s.
Me too.
I did my
boo.
Ah,
it's terrifying. It's the Halloween special here on Songs in the Key of Laugh with me, Spooky Nicol, and him, Creepy Dave.
How have I got Creepy Dave?
Yeah, it was Creepy Dave. I remember when I was growing up and things used to, like vampires used to really scare me. What kind of stuff was scared you?
When I was really little, my brother was obsessed with Beetlejuice, the film.
Michael Keaton.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And there's a musical to Beetlejuice.
There is a musical
written by Eddie Perfect.
Yes.
It was on Broadway.
Okay.
Might be coming to England.
Okay.
Guess who wants to be in it? Me.
Oh my goodness.
I could be Beetlejuice.
I mean, you actually could.
Yeah.
you'd be amazing.
Thanks.
No problem. my brother sat me down and said, This is fine. Watch this film. You'll really enjoy it. I didn't sleep for weeks. Yeah. It was absolutely terrifying.
Wow. It just shows your age, though, because I was an adult when that film came out. The thing that scared me was The Wizard of Oz.
Really?
Not the whole film. Just there's one bit where the tornado's happening and all the cows fly past and the school teacher's on a bicycle and she morphs into the Wicked Witch of the West.
She doesn't do that, does she?
She does.
At that point in the film?
That's in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh,
and also
God.
In The Wizard of Oz, there's some great comedy songs. If I Only Had a Brain.
Or
If Only Had a Heart. Well, they all sing it at some point.
I know the beginning of it. So it's I could while away the hours conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
That's really nice.
In my head I'd be scratching while my thoughts I'd be hatching
if I only had a brain.
That is just one of the best songs of all time.
It's beautiful.
And it's funny. and it's comical.
Phil, did you know it's been almost 100 years since the release of Nosferatu?
Nosferatu, the film. Well, I did know that, David, but did you know that Alexander Scarabin, who wrote The Black Mass in about 1912, 1913, The Black Mass was one of his piano sonatas, it's number 8 or 9.
Number 9, yeah. Right?
And it was used as a score underneath Nosferatu when the piano players used to play live under the film.
That is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Did you also know, on top of that, I know, right? How far can we go?
Top trumps.
Did you know that it was played originally with an orchestra, but then the music that they originally used, nobody knows what it was anymore. And so that recording was never shown.
Well, I seem to remember that Scarabin wrote a piece after that called Mysterium, which was going to be played at the hills of the Himalayas, at the base of the Himalayas, and they're going to project a film onto the Himalayas while the orchestra was playing it in the first ever multimedia performance.
That is very cool.
And that's called Mysterium.
Go Mysterium. On,
check that out. Mm.
So, Phil, you're in the pub, it's Halloween, right? There's a jukebox.
Yeah.
Okay, how many songs can you name that are considered spooky for Halloween? We'll do one each. Let's see how we can do it. Go.
Ghostbusters, the theme from Ghostbusters.
Oh, good one. Okay, yeah. Thriller.
Thriller, okay, that's another one. And Monster Mash, the Monster Mash.
And that's it.
And Kevin, the Funky Vampire.
Who wrote that one, Phil?
I did.
Oh, did you?
I haven't written it yet. Oh, but it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So I always think the Monster Mash is always a popular one. I love the way that in the recording, his voice is... he does it like this. I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld a new sight. When my monsters from the inn began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
they did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
The monster mash.
It caught on in a flash.
The monster mash.
There's also been a lot of songs written like ghost songs or songs about ghosts, like the Phantom 309 about Big Joe and a guy that gets picked up by a Mack truck and then he gets dropped off. Then the guy in the cafe goes, "There is no truck. That's the Phantom 309. Big Joe died saving some kids." And there's also the most famous one I remember growing up was Camouflage by Stan Ridgway. He used to play in the Wall of Voodoo. And it's Camouflage is about a Vietnam vet, a guy that gets saved by this big GI called Camouflage. And when he gets back to the hospital, turns out Camouflage has been dead for a week.
Camouflage, things are never quite the way.
The spirit of ghost songs and trucker songs and, you know, W.C. McCall's Convoy, the famous CB radio song, I wrote a parody or a pastiche called The Warning of Greasy Fist Joe. Well, the moon was full, the night was still, I was breaker 1-9. I'm Rubber Duck Big Jesse in a convoy of 5. Scooter was driving Kenworth, Yellow Man was hauling horse, Stavros drives a grocery grabber, Fred was watching our back door. With no sign of smoke, he pedaled to the metal, we were clear. When we heard that voice, the hair on my neck stood up in mortal fear. Hip, burp, boogity, doo, head, doo, diggity, bop, boo, hop, up, dip, diggity, doo, 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 is what he said. But he was dead. That's the warning of Greasy Fist Joe. And what happens is Greasy Fist Joe warns them by going, "How do 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 little bumbo, him dip dip dee dee do 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 do," is what he said. But he was dead, 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 dead.
Ah, thank you, Phil. What a beautiful song.
Ghosty.
Ghosty, absolutely. Now I think it's time to hear some wonderful work from our lovely listeners.
Well, we've got the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Contest, and there's been an amazing number of entries. Thank you for sending them in. We've chosen two for this week. The first one is Ed MacArthur and his song, osteopath.
Osteopath, you're an osteopath. You're based in Crouch End. You're a leader in your field. You're an osteopath. Osteopath. A bloody good osteopath. You're an osteopath. You're an osteopath. You're an osteopath. Osteopath. You're an osteopath. You're an osteopath. You're an osteopath. Osteopath. Osteopath.
Well, that is Ed MacArthur's Osteopath, and I believe that's one of the best comedy songs we've had in the contest so far.
It also name checks where you live, doesn't it, Phil?
In Crouch End, that is indeed right. And it's also about bones, which fits into the theme of Halloween here on Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Absolutely. Now, our next song is a song about billionaires. It's by Ashley Fries. It's called Billionaires Are Going to Space.
Billionaires are going to space.
One, two.
Those billionaires are going to space.
Billionaires are going to space.
They took their opportunity to make a profit. Then rather than help the world, they help themselves to get right off it.
Blast off!
Billionaires are blasting off. Billionaires are blasting right off.
They're blasting right off.
Though it's not illegal when they grow wealth exponentially, it might teach them a lesson if they burned up on re-entry. 'Cause today there's a lot of people suffering, and your dick swinging contest is proving absolutely nothing. Some are fighting every day just to stay alive, while you piss away your cash for 15 minutes in the sky. Billionaires don't give a toss.
They don't give a toss.
Branson, Musk and Jeff Bezos.
Baldy, baldy Jeff Bezos.
I'm sure that being an astronaut is really quite fulfilling. But if this were a movie, you would be the supervillain. Billionaires, please pay tax instead.
I think that's quite unlikely.
Let the only billionaires be those shortbread.
Shortbread.
It's not your own hard work that caused your stratospheric climb. It's at least partly delivery drivers pissing in bottles to save time. 'Cause today the 1% ends over half. You cannot help but wonder if they're just having a laugh. Perhaps they'll get perspective if they travel to the stars. Or maybe we can banish them to a life on Mars. Cause today they're blowing a few million quid. But it wouldn't be hard with their credit card to feed every single starving kid.
Being a billionaire doesn't seem good for a soul. Perhaps they're already lost down a black hole. Billionaires are going to space.
Billionaires are going to space.
Billionaires are back from space.
They're back again.
Billionaires don't know what life is worth.
It's not on the Dow Jones.
And we're still stuck with Zuckerberg down here on Earth.
Not Zuckerberg.
That's Ashley Fries.
Billionaires are going to space.
Absolutely. What
obviously
a great song.
David Bowie parody, but that's just amazing.
It's very Flight of the Conchords-esque as well, that
it,
one.
It did remind me of that, because they do that great Bowie versus Bowie.
Yes. I'm not going to do it to my Bowie again.
But not it's not a real parody. Week. It's not a quickfire parody.
It's not.
We're going to get given a song we know and have to change it up and make it so hysterical that you win the cup. This game is really easy, just follow all the rules. The rules are really simple, you're not allowed to lose.
Okay, so I'm going to try and redeem myself this week, but I'm going to let you go first, Phil, if that's okay. I feel like I'm playing into your favour, as you are Canadian. I'm going to be using Canada's biggest star.
Really?
Yes.
Neil Young.
No, the other one.
Celine Dion.
The other one.
Joni Mitchell.
It's Bryan Adams, and I would like you to parody the song Run to You. Run to You by Bryan Adams. Adams.
Run to feeling, okay. Run, I'm gonna run all night.
I know how it goes.
Okay, well, of course you do, you're Canadian.
Oh, fuck.
She says her love for bread could never die. Until I hit her in a piece of toast and in the eye. But when it get creeps too much, she lose the touch. I threw a bun at you. I threw a bun at you. And when the feeling's right, I'm gonna hit you in the eye. I threw a bun at you.
Okay.
Quick fire, quick fire, quick fire parody game.
Okay, maybe not one of my best ones there. But how about, David, I give you the Kinks. I like the Kinks. And
I like the Kinks.
Waterloo Sunset. The Kinks, Waterloo Sunset on the quick
Waterloo
fire parody game.
Sunset.
Here on Songs in the Key of Laugh. Do you know the song? You know the
song. Yeah.
It's a classic.
I mean, it just lends itself direct. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
If... second verse is Terry and Julie.
Yeah,
okay. Terry meets Julie, she needs a wee-wee. It's late on Friday night. They are so lazy, she really needs the toilet. She's just not feeling right. But she won't feel afraid as long as she knows there's a Portaloo somewhere. She'll be in paradise. There you go.
Portaloo Sunset. Oh, that's lovely.
It's a lovely thought. Can you imagine just sitting on Waterloo Bridge but with a Portaloo overlooking the beautiful Thames?
Quick fire, quick fire, quick fire parody game.
Do you write comedy songs?
Ever dream of being the next Tim Minchin?
Or being Tim Minchin?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Why not enter our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition and maybe appear on our podcast?
With Tim Minchin.
That's better.
The Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition. Enter today. Visit songsinthekeyoflaugh.com for details. You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh, and we're about to go to our interview. This week, we have an amazing woman.
She is fantastic.
She's a great singer. She's a great songwriter. She's a fabulous comedian. Her name is...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The guest on today's show is someone you might know.
I hope you do.
And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You know you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize.
So.
And this week their name is...
Insert name here.
It's Rialina, everybody. And Rialina, if you don't know her, is appearing on Yesterday Today and the Day Before. She's been on Mock the Week, Steph's Packed Lunch, The Dog Ate My Homework, Sky News, The World Stands Up. Oh my God, you've been on everything, Rialina. Put your hands together for Rialina.
Hey, hi.
Hi, Rialina. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So you are a professional comedian, obviously. That's why you're on the show. You've been playing.
Do you have to make a certain amount of money to make it professional? Is it just like any money?
I feel like no. I think any money makes you professional nowadays.
Right. I am. Yep. As you were, as you go. Yep. All good.
I don't know. It's not weird. I guess that's true.
Right. If a comedian is doing like what we would call a professional slot, like 20 minutes at weekend clubs, but still had a full-time day job that paid most of their rent, what does that make them?
Part-time.
Part-time. Ooh, yeah, part time.
Ooh, part time. See, it's funny. We've got
And what do you? How do you feel about the 10,000 hours concept?
Oh, I definitely have done my 10,000 hours.
Yeah, I'd say you have.
Yeah.
How many years have you been doing comedy for?
Yeah. Enough to put me firmly in my 30s.
Me too.
I did my first gig. Okay, just put it in the comment. I did my first gig, stand-up gig, when I was 18.
When you were 18?
I was 18.
Okay.
And now we are more than a baker's dozen over that.
How have you coped with... the past year and the lockdowns and COVID and things? What have you done creatively to get by?
Oh, those are two very different questions.
Oh, are they?
Okay.
Well,
they
answer
are.
Them both. Answer them
okay.
both.
Okay. Well, first of all, as any true comic, I am a loner and prefer my own company because I think I'm the best. And so lockdown was amazing for me, except for the fact that I live with people that I'm related to. But other than that, like being alone and having all of that time and space to myself, I did not have a problem with. I think that at the very beginning, when they started shutting things down and they were shutting the industry and everything, I know that a lot of people were scared, but it was clear to me at that point that this was such a huge world event that was happening that I knew that we weren't going to be left, you know, to, you know, it's not like if you have a crisis of by yourself in the middle of the world being normal, you're on your own. You know, if you suffer an illness or break a leg and you can't work, often you're on your own and there's no safety net. But I knew in this case, because we were all in it together, that there would at some point be a safety net put in place, which of course was the self-employment grants and furloughs and everything else that came for people. And so I didn't have those worries. Creatively, I actually got into Zoom gigging quite early on. So I did a podcast when we were dead in that first lockdown. I did about 8 or 9 episodes of a podcast, which was called Rialina's Behind. And it was just exploring a little bit more, mainly the science facts of what was going on, because I have a science background, and just speaking to a virologist. What is a virus? Because I think up until this point, people think bacteria, virus, I've got chlamydia. They don't think what that is. It's a bug. You go, you get because that's a common one. I don't know why.
I don't know why you said that. I was thinking, was that, are you talking from experience with that one? Or?
No. Do you know what it was? I was literally writing jokes about koalas yesterday. And that's why I was like, what other, I think I meant to say, I actually, my brain first went to yeast and I went, that's quite a personal female thing. And then immediately went chlamydia, much better.
Yes, chlamydia, much better. For any koalas that are listening, we apologize.
I am so sorry.
It's a very touchy subject. Thank you. Thank you.
It's a very itchy subject.
Hello.
But yeah, so I did that. And then I did the Zoom gigs, which meant that I found that because life was changing week by week, I was writing tons of stand-up for these Zoom gigs that were happening week by week. But I still came out of lockdown a year later going, why do I feel like I have nothing to show for it? Mm. And it's because all that material worked in the moment, or maybe for a month afterwards. And then the jokes were so current that I'm now a month later going, I don't have a set anymore because the old stuff feels really too old and the new stuff is already expired.
Yeah, I find that that's true with the stuff that I was doing on Zoom, the stuff that was about what was happening in our day-to-day lives doesn't work now live. And also live, these audiences that are coming out now don't want to hear about it. They want to move on. There's a few bits that work about, you know, walking through the roads without cars on it and things. But for the most part, I think people just want to move on with their lives now. And
I find Hancock or Boris as a dick, all that stuff they're kind of open to. You know, anything that criticizes the status quo as it is, they're into. But but that's not going to last forever either. That you need to move on from that as well.
Have you found it difficult though? Because people are trying to move on from the fact that we've just been sitting through this for the last year and a half. Are you finding it difficult to find the other material?
Because you can't go on stage and go, hey, I was at the self-checkout the other day, here's some observational material about that, because it feels like who are you, why are you ignoring the situation, why haven't you acknowledged that you were wearing a mask and someone else was standing too close to you, and the stupid, you know, it's finding that balance. But everything in the world right now is pandemic. It's pandemic, yeah. pandemic, Palestine pandemic, and I'm not touching Palestine on stage. So what you're left with is pandemic. And so it's tricky. I think what's tricky to do right now is find evergreen material. So certainly in the short term, I could get on stage on Thursday and talk about stuff that's happened this past week. But even next week, that will be old and that will be gone.
So, okay, I mean, I'm interested in this as an idea as a comedian, because when you say the term evergreen material, it's one of the issues we're facing as comedians is that there is such a fast turnover of knowledge and understanding and topics and a thirst for a new topic, that something like Matt Hancock's thing will be gone almost immediately. And it's not just because they want to cover it up, but when we were younger, that would have lasted a week, a month, and it would have been, we would have gone after it and they would have taken it all apart. Now they've already moved on to the next, there'll be another thing and the next thing. You are presently on a topical new show on Comedy Central. How does that affect, like, how can you keep up if the show tapes on a Monday?
We tape on a Monday and it goes out on a Thursday.
So it goes out on a Thursday. So if you tape on a Monday, sometimes by the Thursday, those things, topical things have changed. How do you cope with that?
In that particular show, I think what they do is they do volume. And so a lot of, like, some stories, obviously, we go into a little bit deeper depth and we have a greater conversation about it. And those are the ones that we sort of judge at the time to be the bigger stories or the ones that have more impact. So that even if it happened a week prior to airing, it will still feel relevant to the viewers. But everything else becomes a quick headline and it becomes a quick punchline. And you go, this happened, this happened, this happened. And by doing it in bulk, you're able to go, look how much we've covered over the past X amount of time. But it's amazing because the number of people that I've found out have said, oh, I get my news from Mock the Week. I'm like, sorry, what? I get my news from Mock the Week. I'm going, okay. But that means that people watching even the Comedy Central show often would be like, oh, I didn't know that. And it doesn't matter to them when it happened. They just didn't know that it had happened. And that's the bigger issue rather than this is old. People who seriously watch the news and have it on all the time usually aren't our target audience.
Now, do you write, this is obviously a podcast about musical comedy specifically. So let's talk a little bit more in depth about that. First of all, what's your background? Are you a conservatoire? Are you a studied musician? How did you stumble across music? Or did you just teach yourself? Tell me a little bit about that.
I am very much a teenager angsty musician type. I mean, my mother very studiously gave me music lessons from a young age, okay, because we're Asian and that's what you do. And so I studied piano from 7, I think, until about 16. I studied piano. But as a teenager, I became interested in songwriting and voice and singing. Mm. But that was, you know, piano, and it was a very classical training as well. So I'm a very classical pianist. I can sit down, I can read the music, I can play the notes. I cannot do what David does, and I wish I could, which is sit there and go, oh, yeah, yeah, that. Oh, how about a G7? Yeah, let's do a G7. Oh, that's nice. Okay, let's do, oh, I kind of know that song. Boom, 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 boom. And just sort of work it out on the piano. Mm. No, can't do that at all. And I found that even like music theory, which is supposed to help with that, where you understand the relationship between chords and progressions and all, nah, doesn't work for me. But neither does teaching me grammar teach me a language. So just don't have the brain for it. But in terms of songwriting and working with words and working with melody, I found that's my forte. And then later I picked up the ukulele because when I picked up a guitar, that sounded awful. And so I downscaled to something I could handle and carry around with me. And so I started on the guitar. So I actually composed my first few songs on a piano and guitar. Then I took a guitar to a gig to try and play it. And I think you have to be good at guitar to play it because people expect you to be good. They don't expect, if you're standing up as a woman in, you know, even 10 years ago in the comedy circuit and you're strumming the guitar like, hey, you know, almost as if you've got an egg shaker just waiting to pop out, then you're going to be crucified. You know what I mean? You know, yeah, the picture I'm painting. It's just like, I, you know, and, you know, this is my deep and meaningful. No. And so I downscaled to the ukulele, just so literally so I could carry it, because that first gig where I had the song and I'd written the song and I had the guitar, I knocked the guitar against someone's chair on the way up to the stage because it was that big and I'm that small, and it knocked the guitar completely out of tune. Mm. So I was on stage panicking, not really able to play it, and it's out of tune and I'm trying to sing a new song, and I went, nah, never again.
Mm. You were talking quite a bit there about songwriting. What is your process when you write a song?
My songs are all quite narrative. They usually always have a narrative arc of some kind, or a twist or a reveal. So that's usually where I start. Or occasionally at the beginning, I would be like, I want to write a song about this area. Like I want to, you know, I go, ooh, this is an interesting topic area for a song. I think one of them was, I remember I wrote a song about incest. Let's caveat this, that when I wrote the Western song, it was about sexual assault, but I wanted to see if I could flip it on its head and, you know, flip it on its head and not make it acceptable, but sing a song where, you know, sing a song about sexual assault, but where the woman wins in the end, kind of, you right. know, where, you know, a flip of a reversal of power, so to speak. And I should be clear to the listeners that this is something that I wrote back in a time when comedy morals were very different. We had a very different moral compass in comedy, even I would say 5-6 years ago. And it's a very different space now that we inhabit, that we're asked to inhabit as artists. And back then, especially because things weren't as sent out over the internet and over the interwaves all the time, and it was very much just for live performance in the room, you could say, right, I've established a contract of trust with the audience, now I want to explore this topic area. And because you had the consent of everyone in the room, you were able to explore those sorts of areas. Nowadays, consent isn't as easily given, even in the room, but it means that it's a lot harder and you have to be a lot safer with what you say and with what you perform, because you don't have as much control of where that's going to go as we used to have.
Obviously, you know me, my body of work is that I am a satirist in an absurdist way, have many problematic bits of material if you go through my back catalogue, to the point where you'd think, what is wrong with this guy? But a lot of it has to do with the social mores of the age. So doing a song like, so I wouldn't shy away about doing a song about incest, but I would be clever enough to make sure that the target the target of that song is, it becomes clear by the end of it. Whereas I think So Things Are Easy to Take Out of Context now, that I feel like I would be on the defensive constantly throughout the piece and not be able to get to it. And the same same goes for the big topics of the day, racism and sexuality, are things that I saw myself or feel that I am an ally, to use a modern concept. But I was satirizing the negative attitudes towards it by becoming that negative attitude.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. Part of the problem isn't that. So likewise, I don't think that I sang any song. I stand by all of my pieces of work in terms of going, I am comfortable with what I wrote and what I said. But the problem is that, and I think the song I want to sing for you at the end is a good example of that, is that you can say a word and people respond to the word rather than the word in context. So you can start verse one, verse two of your song, knowing that by the time you get to the end, you know, through a chorus and a bridge, that it will all come good. But people aren't necessarily willing to even give you that space to get to the end of your art. They're just like, no, you shouldn't have written about this in the first place. How dare you?
Yeah.
And well, that's it. And it shuts it down.
There's been a conversation this week about Tropic Thunder and Robert Downey Jr., playing that character in Tropic Thunder, where he plays a black, he's a white actor, he's an Australian actor who's a method actor who's playing a black character, which is a satire of what method actors and satirizing two things that white actors are even given the part as black characters because there's so little representation. So it's actually satirizing that. It's also satirizing method actors who will go to any length, like Daniel Day-Lewis, who, you know, used to still write letters with his left foot for months after doing the piece. So it's almost it's a satirizing of that, but it's come to light now that just him even putting that I hate calling it blackface, but even him playing an African American is seen as being a negative. And I, as a comedian, we realize there's something about having a musical skill that allows, that gives you a little bit of grace in the mind of an audience. There's a double-edged sword. On one hand, you get some grace from the audience.
Yeah.
In comic terms, you can say and do things that are a bit filthier, a bit naughtier, a bit bleaker, a bit darker, but there's music behind it. Similarly, because you've got the skill and the music, on people look to musicians for opinion. And sometimes musicians, they're just an artist for opinion. And musicians and artists and actors, and, you know, why do they have to have, why is their opinion held any higher than anyone else's? Do you find that people look to you as a musical comedian? They look to you for your opinion?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I see exactly what you're saying in terms of music. And when people use music to put across powerful messages, and are very, very huge in the world, like Beyonce, you know, like she has messaging in her work. People flock to that messaging and then they turn to her for more messaging. I don't think that I have that type of work. And I don't think in, especially in my case, and probably a lot of musical comedy cases, that we're always making points.
Do you think that being behind an instrument gives you slightly more scope to push certain issues slightly further? I've always found that being behind the piano has meant that I can maybe get away with slightly more. I don't know if it's the same for you.
I think the term getting away with it is, I said it earlier when Dave and I were chatting, and I find that's just, getting away with it is kind of gives it a negative slant anyway.
That's true.
Because you're not really getting away with anything. If you're doing a song about incest, this is something that happens. It's not the most joyful topic, but surely if comedy cannot do anything other than try and bring some joy and lightness to the darkest topics. So now try and answer David's question. Or did I just answer it for you? I don't know.
I think your point is well put, is that it's not that we're getting away with something, is that we're saying things that other people might not let straight stand-up say. Mm. Although I think that's also down to skill. I mean, I think it's down to skill and style. I think there are plenty of musical performers that have a style that is so upbeat and whimsical and, you know, dinky, 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 that if they suddenly started making points, we'd be like, stick to your lane, mate. Mm. And likewise, I think there's some wonderful stand-ups that have been able to make some quite heavy points because that suits them and suits their voice. But I don't think I've been hiding so much behind a ukulele. Hiding. I'm not hiding. Can I just be clear? I'm not hiding. I don't think that the uke was necessarily what I was using first and foremost to get away with things. I think being female, I think being Asian, I think being, especially the beginning of my career when I started at 18, looking very young, I think those were things that allowed me to say things that the rest of you know, the audience or the comedy community wouldn't otherwise accept from perhaps a straight white male in his 30s.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And when I was in the Corking the Juice Pigs, we actually took our, even though we were daft and absurd and dark, really twisted, very twisted, we do a song called Burn Victim Girl, which is a love song, you know, might be problematic now. But at the time, we were actually trying to soften blows, and we were very conscious of the effect that the work had on people, and what we were trying to affect the way people think about subjects and how and try and break down those barriers and not make everything a sad song and make some things a happy song. Do you remember songs early on in your life that? Any comedy songs that affected you?
Well, okay, first of all, Monty Python, Parents, that was there. I think that the philosopher song is burned into my brain. And another one actually that did affect me quite greatly in childhood was Victoria Wood's Let's Do It.
Yes, amazing
and
song.
I wrote a song years later as a tribute. So it was definitely, I sort of went, ooh, I want it in the style of... And I played it for my mother, and she went, nope, it's too similar. Sorry, can't have it. She just went, nope, don't like that song. That was about discovering your teenager on porn sites. But
I want to hear all of these.
I wrote some great songs, and I can't put any of them out now because people. I had an album up, and I had to take a lot of it down. It was called Offensive Charm. And it was specifically, it was like in the thing, you might find this offensive, like, don't listen to it if you're a bit of a pussy. But there were just, I was listening to, and I had in between the songs, I would like interview comics backstage in green rooms and just go, will you be on my album and see what happened? So I just had, there were just some things in there that I listened back to it recently and went, I should take that down.
Did you take it down? I'm having that problem right now. I've got my album. It's called Late Night Electric Watermelon. It's only available on Bandcamp. So you really have to find it. I'm not sold that many of them. It's 22 tracks. I went through listening to it and could not find a single track on the album that wasn't problematic.
Yeah, well, this is it. I think for me, I took down most of the talking. There was a Madeleine McCann joke in there that, you know, I was like, maybe I'll take that out. And then things like Mark Dolan did the intro to it. And he said, you know, one of the most extraordinary ukulele players in the world, Riolina, which at the time everyone's like, how did you get him to do that intro? Because he was doing that series of his at the time, which is Mark Dolan meets extraordinary people around the world. But now if people play that, they'd be like, who is that guy? And you're not that extraordinary. Like, you're right, but you know,
yeah,
don't give up your day job.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Eddie Murphy's Raw album's got some pretty problematic stuff, and it's one of the all-time classic comedy albums, but it's like the Tropic Thunder thing. It doesn't hold up. Is that not going to be true for most comedy?
I mean, I believe in context. I believe in timing. I mean, look at, Monty Python. I like Chinese. I mean, that song right now, totally inappropriate. But
they only come up to your knees?
Yeah. Yeah. only come up to your knees.
But surely that's coming.
And ready to please.
But okay, so let's take that apart. I mean,
no, there's not the entire song. If you look at the lyrics, I don't think is that offensive. And this is the other thing about it, is that offense these days doesn't always come from the people, like jokes that aren't intended to offend rarely actually offend those that you think are the aim of it.
Right.
They actually tend to offend a third party watching. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are things that are definitely offensive. And when they're offensive, not just do the people that are the targets find it offensive, other people go, that is not okay.
Yeah.
And I think we're all kind of all in agreement as to what that kind of stuff is. But then you find things like this. I like Chinese. I don't think any Chinese people here I don't know many Chinese people here in the UK that would go, yeah, that song's a real problem and my life is terrible because of it. And when I walk around, that's all people sing at me. You know, I don't know if it's come up. I can't speak, but I don't know if it's come up. I doubt it's come up when, you know, people started calling SARS-2 the China virus and then attacking people for that. I doubt that this song played heavily in that.
Mm.
And I, as an Asian woman, look at it and I quite like it. And in fact, growing up as an Asian girl in white Britain, even though I don't sound it, but I did, Chaplin St. Peter Middle School. And I actually sought out and loved references that I could cling to, because so much of the media, so much of music, so much of what was on TV wasn't accessible to me in terms of I didn't see myself in it. I didn't see me. That whenever there was something Asian, I'm like, boom, that's my favorite song.
Mm.
That's my favorite actor. Or I love this show because it has a strong Asian female in it.
So I Like Chinese by Monty Python. It starts off with the world today seems absolutely crackers with nuclear bombs to blow us all sky high. There's fools and idiots sitting on the trigger. It's depressing and it's senseless. And that's why I like Chinese. And we go into that song. I don't know. That kind of lays the ground, like does a bit of groundwork for them to kind of cover themselves. But it's I find it amazing that they were that they thought about that even like so many years ago when they were writing these songs. And that's something that you still definitely, like even more so, have to do now, is to kind of cover yourself before bringing in that punchline. Like we were talking a moment ago about writing a song about incest. You do have to do, cover quite a lot of groundwork before you can bring that subject to the forefront of the song.
I don't think it's as funny without it, though, as well. That's where the comedy beat drops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the fact that we go, the world is awful.
Yeah.
But I like them. I mean, in fact, it's the kind of song, I think this is a perennial, this is one of those things that some songs go out of fashion and then suddenly you come back to it and you go, this is so apt for now.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I mean, how many people have rewritten Billy Joel's We Didn't Light the Fire?
Yeah,
because the song and the structure itself, you go, why mess with this? It's the perfect structure. We'll just change some of the actual examples.
But Phil, we're going into the favourite part of the podcast.
Are we?
Yeah. Oh, it's your favourite part of the podcast, isn't it?
This is my personal favourite part of the podcast.
It is, because we are going to ask Rialina to play for us. Have you got a song for us, Rialina?
No. No, sorry. So I picked this before we spoke, but this is something that I don't think anyone with a brain that listens to it would ever think should be censored. But obviously there will be people that disagree with it. So I picked it because it's not straightforward as a comedy song. It's not like straightforward and simple. You just go, oh, that was nice. Like this definitely, that's why I picked it. And that's kind of what I like to do with music anyway, is not just go, la da 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 da, you thought it would rhyme with cunt, it didn't. I prefer a little bit more than that.
Okay.
I wrote this after a few things happened in the US last year.
Okay.
In a couple of different states, and some decisions were made. And I personally very strongly believe that a woman's body is her own to make decisions about,
mm-hmm.
and any medical decision should be made between her and her doctor, not between her and her local representative. And so this song is called Dear Alabama Senate, and it's my open letter to the Alabama Senate after they passed certain laws. And it has punchlines. Dear Alabama Senate, I am writing to complain, 'cause my mom was raped and forced to have me all in Jesus' name. But my mama couldn't cope, they found her swinging from the porch. Now I'm being abused in an orphanage run by the Catholic Church. Now I'm not that bright, my chances going forward are quite slim. I got a cleft lip 'cause my daddy's uncle also fathered him. They could have fixed it, said the doctors, wish they had, it hurts like hell. But you goddamn politicians cut the funds for that as well. Who the hell are you to say I'm better off not being aborted? Just because I had a heartbeat doesn't mean my life was sordid. Now I'm a burden on the state, but I'm alive, that's all that matters. Not my mental health, my mama's life, or women's rights, 'cause they're in tatters. Now I hope my letter's clear and that my spelling ain't too bad. I used what paper I could find, the only pencil my school had. My teacher would have liked to help, she says pro-life is persecution. But I haven't seen her since she tried to teach us evolution. What's your mama do to you to make you hate all womankind? What do you remember from the womb that sets your state of mind? If you think a ball of cells has rights, I guess we have our answer. As to whether you'd get treatment if you found out you had cancer. Now, Mr. Senator, if from this letter, Mr. Senator, only one home truth you take, please let it be that if I lived or died was not your choice to make. When doctors vow to preserve life, the life not yet here ain't the one. But fingers crossed it's yours, 'cause I'm outside your office with a gun.
Oh!
That was amazing.
That's so good. That's really funny.
Thanks, Phil. I really feel you mean it.
No, you know what? I've never heard anything quite as amazing.
I know, and you've been in the West End, so.
Rialina, thanks for joining us on Songs in the Key of Life, a podcast. Songs in the Key of Love is a very different podcast.
It is indeed.
So Ria, thank you for coming on. Thank you for singing and performing for us. And
thank you.
That's Rialina, everybody.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye, goodbye.
Well, that brings us to the end of our Halloween edition of Songs in the Key of Laugh with me, Spooky Phil Nickel.
And me, I'm not calling myself creepy. Phil wants me to call myself Creepy
Everyone else calls you creepy.
They don't. Everybody has a friend, Creepy Dave, don't they? It's not good. It's not a good look. No, I'm David Timms.
Thanks for supporting our podcast. If you want to donate some money to us, you can go to our Patreon or you can go coffee. And if you don't have any money to donate, just tell your friends and try and get more people listening, because it would be really great for us and you.
Yeah, please like and subscribe. I don't think I've ever said that before.
Subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
If you'd like to know more about Rialina, why not visit her website, rialina.com, or follow her on Twitter at @Rialina_, or even better, follow her on Instagram at @Rialina_.
And please keep sending us your songs for the Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition at songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
Support our podcast, patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh, or ko-fi.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh.
Bye guys.
Happy Halloween.
Woohoo!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.